We're learning Perek Tesvav and Sefer Shoftim, continuing in the story with the story of Shimshon. So interesting story. And again, if just to recap, at the end of last Perek, so we discussed this dispute between Shimshon and the Plishtim, which stemmed from this riddle. As he was getting married, he gave this riddle to the Plishtim, and the Plishtim, ended up being frustrated by the riddle, and they essentially coerced his wife to give them the answer to the riddle. Shimshon was not very happy about that. And at the very end of the parak, if you remember, so it says that Shimshon left and his wife, kind of went to be with another man, which will be important for this parak. So the Pasuk says, Pasuk Aleph, Vayihim Yamim, and it was after several days. It's not clear exactly how long this was. Mesudas Tzion says that either it means several days, like it sounds, or maybe it means a year. It might mean a year's time. Vayim yamim bimei kitzir chitim. This will also be important. It was at the time of the wheat harvest. Vayivkod Shimshon es ishto bigdi izim. And vayivkod, the Mefarshim say, is a language of remembering. Right? That just like it says, pakod yivkod elokim eschem, that Hashem will remember you and save you from Mitzrayim, referring to Klal Yisrael. So here to vayivkod, that Shimshon remembers his wife. Again, he's not with his wife, right? Because he was upset, he left. He wasn't with his wife, but he remembers his wife. He wants to get back together. Gdi Izim, and he remembers her by bringing her a Gdi Izim. Interesting also, we find, the Mefarshim don't address this really, but we find the concept of Gdi, Gdi Izim, goats, playing a very central role. We're in the middle of Sefer Bereishis. So we have the goats with the blood of the goat that the Kesonas Pasim is dipped into. We have the goats of Tamar and Yehuda. The Yehuda gives Tamar goats as a collateral. So here too we have this Gidi Izim that Shimshon is bringing as a present for his wife. Vayomer Avoa El Ishti. So he says, let me come and be with my wife. Hechadra. Let me come and be with her in the room. He's referring obviously to being intimate as well. Velonu Sano Aviha Lavo. He comes, knocks on the door, and her father says, no thanks. We don't want any. Have a nice day. You haven't been around. We don't want, we're not interested.
How long is this?
Again, it's not clear. Mitzudas Tzion says either a year or less than a year. So it doesn't sound like it was more than a year. So it was either a couple of months or it was a year. Pasuk just says miyamin. Right, so we don't know exactly how long that was. Pasuk says vayomer aviha. So the father says to Shimshon, the shver, amor amarti kisano senesa. I said that you hated her, right? Obviously, you stormed out. You got married, and you left the house, and you stormed out. So I assumed that you didn't like her very much. So I gave her to a friend of yours, right? Not really a friend, but it means another person, acquaintance. Probably one of the chevra from when we read in the last parak, the Mereyim, right? We had these chevra that came to be mesameach with Shimshon, probably one of them. Halo achosa ktana tova mimena. But he says, don't worry, she has a younger sister, and her younger sister is even better than she is. Tehina lacha tachteha. So she can marry you instead of her. So he's he wasn't very very happy. Tzudas David says that the assumption here was that because she revealed his secret. Right, this was the wife that had revealed the secret to the Plishtim. So because of that, says her father, I assume that you hated her because of that. You ran out of the, you stormed out of the house. I assume that you hated her, and that's why I gave her up.
You said the guy can't marry his wife's sister.
He can't marry, right, yeah, I mean, yeah, they're Plishtim. So presumably they would convert. The first woman, we spoke about last week, the first woman probably converted. So once they convert, technically you can marry two sisters. Because once they convert, it's kekatan hanogla dami, like a new person, not related. Yeah. The Malbim says, if you look in your medayik at the end of the pasuk, tehi na lecha tachteha, that this one will only be for you. The other one, she had eyes for other men as well. That's what we saw in last week's parasha. I'm sorry, last week's Perek. She wasn't all that faithful to begin with. She may not have been very much in love with Shimshon to begin with. So he says, that one kind of, she wasn't very faithful. She had eyes for other men. This one will be just lecha. This one will really just be for you, and she'll love you, and this will be a good shidduch for you. Pasuk Gimel. Now you can imagine Shimshon's not very happy with this arrangement. Vayomer lahem Shimshon. So Shimshon says to them. Now again, to them. Presumably he's talking to the household. You know, the father-in-law is there, but he announces to everybody who's within earshot. Nikesi hapam miplishtim ki oseh ani imam ra'a. He says, I'm about to do something bad to the plishtim, but my record is clean. Right? My record is clean. I'm not to blame for this. Why? Because says Rashi, what he's saying is, I'm justified in what I'm about to do. I'm about to do something to take revenge on the plishtim, but I'm justified in this, right? Why is it justified? So it says the Malbim, because he believed that this second marriage was a public affair, a public ordeal. People knew about it, and they didn't protest. This is a married woman. It's a married woman being given to someone else to marry. How do you do such a thing? People should have said, you can't do that. She's a married woman. Okay, so he left the house. You got to talk to him. You got to do something. You can't just give her to somebody else. She's a married woman. So Shimshon says, because the people presumably knew about this and did not protest. They knew we were married and they didn't protest this. So therefore, I'm justified in what I'm about to do. I'm justified in what I'm about to do. And that's what he's saying. Nikesi hapam. I'm clean.
Are we talking about the first wife?
Yes.
But she's not living with him anymore.
Correct.
But they're still married.
They're still married.
Yes.
They never got divorced.
Okay, so?
So he's saying that if my married wife went ahead and married someone else.
From the friends.
From the friends, and everybody saw that this happened, nobody said anything, nobody protested. So she's chayav misa, everybody's chayav misa. I can kill everyone. Right? Well, it's usually worse. Right? If they're B'nai Noach. Arayos is one of them, sure. Right? Right? Gilui Arayos is one of the Shev Mitzvot B'nai Noach. They can't have an affair with a married woman. Right? It's against the law. Pasuk Dalet. So what does he do? Vayelech Shimshon. So Shimshon goes, Vayilkod Shalosh Meos Shualim. He captures 300 foxes. Vayikach lapidim. And he takes torches. Vayefen zonav el zonav. He turns the foxes so that their tails are facing each other. Right? Pairs of foxes, their tails are facing each other. Vayosem lapid echad bein shnei haznavos batovech. And he places a torch between two foxes. Right? You know, somehow tied together. I don't know exactly. It doesn't say exactly how he fastened them. Maybe he tied it up. You know, I don't know exactly if the tails were holding it. Whatever it was. But he tied, presumably he took these two tails and he tied them to the torches. And that way the torch would, and that way, you know, the foxes would run and the torches would burn things. Now, it's interesting. Why foxes? Now what's this whole business with the foxes? I mean, you could have done this in many different ways. Why foxes? So the Radak says, the Pashup Shot, he says foxes are known to, they have a tendency to move backwards, to walk backwards. So therefore, he thought that if he would put the torch between the two foxes, they would both walk backwards and that would kind of keep the torch between them. You know, I don't know, maybe they literally would like, you know, walk backwards to the point where the torch was stuck between them. Now, I don't know exactly how they ran at that. You know, if they were running, you know what would happen. But apparently there's some kind of mitzias like that. So Rashi in Sota, actually, he's quoting the Gemara in Sota says. Well, I should say he quotes Chazal also. That's the Pashup Shot he says, and then he says according to the Drash, he quotes the Gemara in Sota. The Gemara in Sota says that this was also symbolic. It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just strategic that the foxes were a good animal to kind of stick this torch in and have them hold it steady, but he said it was also symbolic that just like the foxes walk backwards, and again, this is the assumption, the foxes walk backwards, so the plishtim also backpedaled on their promise. What was their promise? So the Gemara says that the promise that Avimelech, who was the king of the plishtim, made to Avraham, that they would leave in peace, right? They would be b'shalom. So that promise was violated by these plishtim, who were the great 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 grandsons of Avimelech, and they violated the promise. So they backpedaled, so to speak. they reneged on their promise that Avimelech made to Avram, and therefore he was implying that and symbolizing that with the foxes specifically, that are animals that move backwards. Yeah.
You're hurting the animals.
Well, presumably he did it in a way. It's not clear that the animals were hurt. Presumably he did it in a way where they weren't hurt. You know, I don't know. The Rashi on the Gemara there interestingly says that when you hunt a fox, and again I'm not a big fox hunter, but apparently when you hunt a fox, the fox doesn't run away from you, but it kind of backs away from you. You know, the fox, I guess that when it's scared, it doesn't turn around and run, but it like kind of moves backwards. And the Maharsha says that the reason, the Maharsha in that Gemara says the reason why it was two foxes, right? Two foxes back to back, so to speak. So what was the reason? What was the symbolism behind that? That just like the Plishtim are backpedaling from their promise, so he says, so too Bnei Yisrael also are not bound by their promise. So if the Plishtim are not acting b'shalom and they're doing something wrong, so then the treaty's off, right? No deal. If you violate the terms of your agreement, so then deal's off, treaty's off. And if you're backpedaling, we can also backpedal on our end, and therefore we can also hurt you. Presumably it means he turned the foxes around back to back. Exactly. Right.
The promise of Avimelech was a national promise, not an individual discretion.
Well, it was a promise that the Plishti nation would be b'shalom. Right.
So the whole nation was not b'shalom. Somebody was an adulterer, whatever it is. But
so Shimshon is viewing this, and the question is also, how much of this is legitimate? That he's really viewing it this way, and how much of it is an excuse? As we learned last week, that many of the things that Shimshon does are strategies in order to punish the Plishtim. He's looking for ways to punish the Plishtim. That's why he ended up marrying. Like we asked last week, why does he marry Plishti women? Right? We're going to see another. There's other Plishti women that he's going to marry. Right? So why is he marrying Plishti women? Because that's his way to get in. Right? That's his way to get in. And once he's in, he can destroy from the inside. So here too, he's figuring out ways to have a title on them, to have a claim on them, to have, you know, like he says, right? Nakisi apam, I'm clean.
So if he's thinking that way, then he broke the promise.
Yeah, but again, he's doing
it. Strategizing to get, as soon as he took the wife, if that's his strategy, then he's the one who broke the promise.
Yeah, but he says, I didn't do anything wrong. Again, you know, he's doing it in a way where it's a chop, you know, he can kind of catch them. That's what it seems. Okay. Yeah. It might have been, you know, contrived. This whole thing, you know, could have been contrived, but he's looking for a masla. He's looking for some sort of an excuse to punish them. Okay. I actually, believe it or not, I Googled, does a fox walk backwards? You know, because I'm seeing all this, so it's interesting. Apparently there are some animals that can walk backwards and some can't. Not all animals can walk backwards. We take it for granted. You know, we think we can just walk backwards. Not all animals can walk backwards. So apparently the fox can walk backwards. And there was some writer in 1929 who wrote about the fact that the fox does walk backwards when it has fleas on it or something like that. It kind of backs into the water and the fleas are afraid of drowning, and therefore they move on to, like, it holds a stick in its mouth. He wrote a whole chachma of how a fox walks backwards to rid itself of the fleas. But apparently scientists later have questioned that it might not really be true, you know, what he wrote. But apparently in the 1920s, this person wrote about foxes walking backwards into the water. So there is a thing out there about foxes walking backwards. You can Google it later and find out. But the Malbim, interestingly, says that there was an additional layer of symbolism here as well. It wasn't just, you know, the Plishtim reneging on their end, and therefore Bnei Yisrael, you know, reneging on their end. But the Malbim says that the torch between the two foxes also represents this woman being between the two men. Right? That here you have a married woman. She was first married to Shimshon. Shimshon liked her, Shimshon loved her. That's what we discussed last week. And she was tied to Shimshon, so to speak, and he's pulling her this way. And meanwhile, she's really now in love with someone else and was given to someone else as a husband, so he's pulling her that way. So you have the torch, right, which represents the woman who has the ability to inflame a man, and she's kind of stuck in the middle there. And, you know, and the two men are struggling over this torch. That's also the two foxes with their tails, you know, pulling in either direction, says the Malbim. That's also symbolic of what's really going on here. Okay, so what does he do with these, oh, I'm sorry. And just the Malbim says that this is actually based on Psukim and Mishle, very interesting Psukim and Mishle. So the Pasuk says, Hayachte ish eish becheiko v'godav lo tisarafna. Is it possible for a person to stoke a fire, you know, in his chest, and he's not going to get burned? Is it possible for a man to walk over coals and not burn his feet? So too, says the Pasuk in Mishlei, that one who comes upon his neighbor's wife, his friend's wife, he's also going to get burned. You know, when he touches the coals, he's going to get burned. So says the Malbim, you see that the Pasuk in Mishlei already uses this mashal of a woman being like these embers, like the coals, like the torch, and a man, you know, kind of pulling at it and getting burned if he's doing something wrong. Okay, Pasuk Hey, Vayaver Eish Balapidim, so he ignites the fires in these torches. Vayishalach Bekamos Plishtim, and he sends the foxes out to the standing grain of the Plishtim, and that's why the Pasuk said, the first Pasuk in the Perek, that it was Bimei Kitzir Chitin, that was important. Because that's the damage that he's about to do. Vayaver migodish ve'ad kama ve'ad kerem zayis. So and he destroys right through these 300 foxes, which is you think it's about 150, you know, torches, right? Because each two foxes has a torch, 150 torches. So he burns basically a large swath of land that belongs to the Plishtim, and migodish ve'ad kama. From Gadish, which is the stored grain, which is the grain that's already been harvested and is now in piles waiting to be processed, the Ad Kama, to the standing grain, the Ad Kerem Zayis. The question exactly what Kerem Zayis means, either Kerem Zayis, because Kerem usually means a vineyard. So either Kerem Zayis means there were grapes and olives as well, right? There were not just wheat, but grapes and olives. Some say there were just olives, and even a even an olive orchard is can sometimes be referred to as a kerem. We normally think of kerem as grapes, but sometimes that can be referred to as a kerem as well. So he destroys this large swath of land that belongs to the Plishtim, presumably a lot of money that was lost, right? I couldn't help but think of what the, you know, Lahavdil in a sense, you know, in Lahavdil, of what the you know, Palestinians in Gaza do. You know, they send those balloons, you know, the incendiary balloons, they send some sort of a bomb on a balloon and burn the fields. So essentially that was what, you know, that was what Shimshon was doing to the Plishtim in the opposite way. Vayomru Plishtim. So now the Plishtim see what happens, and this was like, you know, devastation to the crops of the Plishtim. Mi asazos. What happened here? Who did this? Vayomru. So they said, people, you know, got wind of what was going on. Vayomru Shimshon. Chasan Hatimli. So who was it? It was Shimshon, the son-in-law of the Timni. That was this fellow who lived in Timna. That's what we learned last week. Ki lokach es ishto vayidna lemere'ehu. Because he took Shimshon's wife, his daughter, and he gave her to somebody else, another friend of his. And that's why Shimshon did this. Vayalu plishtim vayisrifu osa v'yes aviha ba'esh. So interesting, what's their reaction? Their first reaction is not that Shimshon, let's go kill him. The first reaction is what kind of fool does this kind of thing? Of course, you know, it's almost like we understand that Shimshon is upset, and they go and they kill the father-in-law and the daughter, right? And Shimshon's wife, you know, they kill them because they say, look what you caused, right? So they go ahead and do that. And Mitzudas David said they also did it a little bit to appease Shimshon. They're probably scared. Look what this guy did. You know, single-handedly, he just destroyed all of our crops. They were a little bit nervous. They were a little bit scared. So they want to kind of, you know, put him at ease a little bit. We'll see. They also want to, they're also not so happy with him, right? But they want to put him at ease a little bit. And therefore, they do this to appease him by killing him and by killing her. Pasuk Zion. Now, so, it says, you know, Mitzudas Nava said they just did it to appease Shimshon. It has the opposite effect. Because Shimshon, keep in mind, what's the whole reason why he did this? Because somebody stole his wife. Now, not only was his wife stolen, she was killed, right, as a result of this. And he doesn't think he did anything wrong, Shimshon. Pasuk Zayin. Vayomer lahem Shimshon. So Shimshon says to them, and again, presumably this is through a messenger, he sends a message that this is that these are his feelings. Im tasun kazos, Ki im nikamti vachem ve'achar echdo. Right? If you're doing this, if this is what you do, so what's im tasun kazos? So says Rashi, im tasun kazos. If you would do this, meaning if you would allow a married woman to marry someone else, if that's normal, right? That's what you allow. And again, because they didn't protest, they didn't stop anything. Ki im nakamti vachem ve'achar echdo. Says Shimshon, I have one more thing to do. Right? I haven't finished my revenge. I haven't finished my revenge yet. I have one more thing to do, and then I'll stop. Right? And then I'll cease and desist. The Radak says that Shimshon is thinking like this. If they would have punished the father and the girl right away, so Shimshon says, I would be fine with that. They did something wrong. The Plishtim punished them. Right, punish the father, punish the girl. Even if they burn them at the stake, you know, for marrying another, you know, committing adultery, marrying another man, the father allowing it, that's fine. But here, why'd you do it? Here, you just killed my wife and my father-in-law. Why? Only because I'm upset. You didn't do it because it's wrong. You didn't do it because they did something wrong. Because she had an affair. That's not why you killed her. You killed her because I'm mad, right? And you're scared of me because I just burned your fields down. That's why you killed it. So therefore, I'm not going to stop, right? I'm not appeased by this. Just because, you know, you did this one thing, you think you punished them. I'm not appeased by that. And therefore, I'm going to take one last revenge on you. I'm going to do one last thing before I stop. The Malbim says also that there was a little bit of a lumdus here. And the Malbim says that Shimshon argues with them now that, you know, I thought that a financial punishment would be okay, a monetary punishment. I burned your fields. Right, that's monetary. You lost money. I thought that would be okay. That would be a sufficient way to punish you. But I see from the fact that you now killed her and killed him that you're treating this like a capital crime. If you're treating this like a capital crime, then I can't just punish you monetarily. Then I have to punish you capital. I have to kill people. Right? And as had you not done anything, so says the Malbim, I could, okay, I punished you. I punished you, right? I burned your fields. But says the Malbim, now, says Shimshon, now that I see you're treating this more seriously because you killed her and you killed him, you executed them. So now I have to do something more serious. I have to do the same. I have to act in kind. Pasuk Ches. Vayach osam shok al yorech makog edola vayered vayeshev b'sif sela etom. So now Shimshon kills a lot of people now based on this. It doesn't say exactly, you know, how many or what was done, but he kills a lot of people. And the pasuk, I'm sorry?
Which people?
The Plishtim. These Plishtim who killed his father-in-law and his wife, right? He now goes and kills them. And again, it doesn't say how many. It just says he killed Makah Gedola. Right? He did a lot of damage. He killed a lot of people. Doesn't say exactly how many. It's interesting, this terminology of Shok Al Yarech. All the Mefarshim, you know, are bothered by this. What's the description here of a Shok Al Yarech? So Shok and Yarech are presumably two parts of the leg. Right, not clear exactly which parts of the leg they are, but some say the yarech is the thigh, is the upper part of the leg, and the shok is the lower part of the leg. So the Mitzvah Astavit says some of the mefarshim, several of the mefarshim, quote the Targum Yonasan, who says shok al yarech refers to the mounted soldiers, right, the soldiers that rode horses, and the foot soldiers, that both of them were killed, and the. The Rashi explains that the riders, right, the mounted soldiers, were referred to as shok, because they supported themselves with their legs, and with the shok, their feet were in the stirrups and their legs were supporting them. So that's the shok, and yarech refers to the foot soldiers. The Mitzvah Astavit says the opposite. Yarech means the thigh, and that's the mounted soldiers, and the shok is the lower part of the leg, and that's the foot soldiers. So either way you go, it's presumably referring to different types of soldiers. The Radak says it's not referring to different types of soldiers, but it means that as they fled, right, meaning they didn't even put up a fight. Once they saw Shimshon coming, they just started running, and shok al yarech, right, as they're running, Shimshon is killing them, right? You know, he's killing them and they're falling, and the concept of shok al yarech, like the thigh on top of the lower leg, that is, you know, as they're running and falling, he's just slaughtering all of these plishtim.
How could Shimshon possibly kill so many people single-handedly?
He was a mighty warrior. I mean, we see throughout all of these stories that he had, you know, superhuman strength, often miraculous strength. I don't know exactly how big he was. We don't have any description in the Navi that he was significantly bigger than anyone else. It was not like he was a giant, but he was apparently a, you know, like one of these superhuman soldiers.
Rambo.
You know, like a Rambo, exactly, Rambo. A Rambo type, who just could, you know, mow down everybody in front of him, you know. I mean, listen, we see that with the lion, like we talked about last week. He tore this lion apart. You know, this was his unique, you know, this was his uniqueness of all the Shoftim. You know, we find other Shoftim that were, you know, had military minds and, you know, were able to strategize and were mighty generals. You know, Shimshon is a unique type of, you know, type of warrior. Okay. Pasuk Tes. Vayalu plishtim vayachnu b'Yehuda vayinatshu b'alechi. So the plishtim are not going to take this sitting down, but they have to kind of regroup and figure out how to approach this, because they can't just attack Shimshon. They realize because he's going to mop the floor with them. So they come up and they camp in the right across from Shevet Yehuda, vayinatshu b'alechi, and they spread out and they camp in this place called Lechi. That was the name of the location. The Radak says the reason why it's called a Lechi is because we're about to see in a few psukim that the lechi, this jawbone of a donkey that Shimshon is going to find, is going to be his weapon with which he's going to kill even more people. And it's called this way, you know, based on, you know, through Ruach HaKodesh, that this is eventually going to happen in this place. That's why it's named Lechi, the name of this place. Pasuk Yud, Vayomru Ish Yehuda, Lama Alisem Aleinu. So the people of Yehuda see that all these plishtim are camping out, you know, across from them. They're getting a little bit nervous. So they send out a messenger and they ask them, "What are you here for? You know, what would you like?" Vayomru, and they respond, "Leesor es Shimshon aleinu la'asos lo kasher asalanu." They say, "We'd like." Now it sounds like from the pasuk that they're saying, "We'd like to capture Shimshon." Right? Leesor is to tie up, to bind up. We'd like to capture Shimshon and do to him what he did to us. Right? We'd like to punish him. So we're coming to you. Now the question is, why are they coming to the people of Yehuda if they want to capture Shimshon? Just go after Shimshon. So Rashi here says that they actually want Yehuda's help, because they realize that if they just come and attack Shimshon themselves, they very well might not win, and he's going to slaughter them. So they figured that if using his strategy against him, you know, Shimshon goes into the plishtim and he destroys them from the inside. Let's do the same. Let's do an inside job. Let's go to Yehuda, Shevet Yehuda, and let's convince them to capture Shimshon and to hand him over to us. And says Rashi, that's really what they were asking. They were asking the people of Yehuda to themselves capture Shimshon and hand them over to the plishtim. So Yehuda says, okay, right? You know, we don't want to get hurt. But we see all these plishtim camping against us. We don't want to get hurt, so we're going to do it. Vayerdu shloshes alafim ish miYehuda. So 3,000 men. They send 3,000 men from Shevet Yehuda down to where Shimshon is, El Seif Sela Eitam. That's where Shimshon was settled, as we read at the end of Pasuk Ches. Vayomer leShimshon, and they say to Shimshon, Halo yadata kimoshlim banu plishtim. They say, don't you know that the plishtim are the ones who are ruling over us? Right? The plishtim were still in charge, keep in mind. It's not like, you know, this is part of the enigma of the Shofet of Shimshon, that he never overthrows the plishtim. Right? We don't have any, you know, like the other Shoftim, we find that, you know, the Shofet was able to push them back and kind of push them off of Bnei Yisrael so that they didn't rule over Bnei Yisrael. The Plishtim are still ruling over Bnei Yisrael here. He has little victories here and there from the inside, right? He kills, you know, a lot of people. He kills a lot of people here, kills a lot of people here. But he's not overthrowing the Plishtim. So the people of Yehuda come to him and they say, don't you know that the Plishtim are still ruling over us? Because you did this, what's going to happen? They're going to take revenge on us, right? They're going to kill us. That's what the people of Yehuda were afraid of. Umazos asisalan. Why did you do this to us? Right? Again, why did you do this to us? Because, you know, you're putting us at risk. Vayomer lohem. So he says to them, kasher osuli kein asisi lohem. Right? Which is an interesting playoff of the words of the previous pasuk. Right? Shimshon says, what they did to me, I'm doing to them. Right? What they did to me, I'm doing to them. Why? Meaning he's saying that they wronged me. They wronged me because they They allowed my wife to marry someone else. Nobody protested. Nobody said boo. Nobody stopped her. So they wronged me. So that's why I'm taking revenge on them. That's how the Metzudas Dovid understands it. And the Radak as well. They did something to me. I'm doing it to them. And again, playing off of those words at the end of Pasuk Yud, that was the Plishtim's claim, right? That we want to do La Sos Lo Kasher Asalanu. Shimshon saying, that's what I did. I just did what you did to me. That's everybody's pointing fingers at the other, saying it's your fault. But I'm just getting back at you for what you did to me. Now the Malbim says here something very interesting. The Malbim says that if Goyim come and ask to kill one person, and imagine that they come to a city and they say, hand over one person. And we had unfortunately had shilas like this in the Holocaust, and terrible shilas like this. And they say, hand over one person, we'll kill him. Or if not, we're going to kill a lot of people. Are you allowed to give one person over? No. So the halacha is you're not allowed to do that, right? According to most shittas, according to the Rambam, certainly you're not. Unless there are two exceptions, says the Malbim. One exception is that if the person is chayav misa anyway. Right? Let's say the guy is chayav misa. He did something that makes him chayav misa. Beis Din hasn't punished him. Or let's say can punish him, or whatever the case is. So that person you're allowed to give up. Because he's chayav misa anyway. So you're essentially just causing him to die, which he really deserves anyway. That's one exception. Another exception, says the Malbim, is that if someone is putting the masses in danger, let's say someone is doing something which puts others in danger, says the Malbim, he's a rodef. He's a rodef. What's a rodef? A rodef is someone who's chasing after someone else to kill them. So here, if this guy is putting others in danger, he has the status of a rodef. If he's a rodef, he can be handed over to the guy, right? Because you can give him up, and then he'll be killed. So their claim to Shimshon was, you're a rodef. Vayomru l'Shimshon, halo yadati ki moshnim banu plishnim u'mazel sasisolana. You're putting us at risk. You're doing something which is angering the plishnim. The plishnim, they're the ones who are ruling over Bnei Yisrael. They're going to come in and they're going to hurt us. So you're putting us in danger. You're putting us in danger. Vayomru lohem, so what's his response, says the Malbim? Kasher asuli kena sisi lohem. Shimshon says, I'm not putting you in danger. This is between me and the Plishtim, right? They did something to me, I'm doing something to them. This is not Klal Yisrael. I'm not coming on behalf of Klal Yisrael. This is a personal matter. This is a personal grudge, says Shimshon. And therefore Shimshon says, I'm not putting you at risk. You can't hand me over. I'm not putting you at risk. Now, it seems that he was wrong, Shimshon, because again, the Plishtim all came to Shevet Yehuda, and they camped across from them. It sounds like they did it in a threatening way. Which almost indicated to the people of Yehuda that we will attack you if you don't do this and you don't go get Shimshon and capture him and bring him to us. So Shimshon presumably was wrong. Vayomru lo, Pasuk Yud Beis, le'esarcha yoradnu. So they say to him, we've come to tie you up, we've come to bind you up, and to give le'sitcha b'yad plishtim, and to give you over to the plishtim. Right? Again, because they're saying that you put us in danger, right? And then what you did wasn't right, and therefore we're gonna capture you, we're gonna tie you up, and we're gonna give you to the Plishtim. What does the Shimshon respond? Vayomer lahem Shimshon, he shavuli pentivka on biatem. Shimshon says, okay, I'll go. Right? Now it's not clear exactly why he just gave in so easily. Maybe he was getting a little nervous that maybe the Plishtim will take out their anger on Bnei Yisrael, which he didn't want to happen. Right? He didn't want other people getting hurt, other people getting attacked because of his grudge and his fight. So he said, okay, I'll go, but just promise me that you won't touch me. Promise me that you won't hurt me. Right? Because Shimshon's saying, listen, Plishtim, also the Plishtim I can deal with. Plishtim I can deal with. But you can't touch me because I don't deserve to be hurt by you. Pasuk Yud Gimel. I'm sorry. And the Malbim also says here that Shimshon was chayiv misa to the Malchus. Again, they were the Malchus, right? Plishtim were the Malchus. And he's saying, you did something wrong to the Malchus and you're chayiv misa. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayomru lo leimor. So they said to him, Lo ki asor ne'esarcha unesanucha biyadam. So they said, no, we're not going to touch you. We're going to tie you up, right? We're going to handcuff you and we're going to just give you to the Plishtim. So hameis lo nimisecha. We're not going to hurt you. We're not going to kill you. Vayaasruhu bishnayim avosim chadoshim. So they did it. He stuck out his hands They tied him up. They bound his hands with two new ropes. Interesting, I guess, new ropes because they're strong, right? Again, Shimshon was a strong guy, so they had to, you know, they had to really take the necessary precautions here. So they tied him up with these two brand new ropes. Vaya'aluhu min ha'sala, and they brought him up from where he was, from where he was camped. The Yehuda was above in elevation, was above this, and that's why it says that in pasuk Yidalef it says vayerdu, that they went down. So now it's saying vaya'aluhu, that they're going up. Thank you. So pasuk Yudalef, hu va'ad lechi. So he's coming, right? Shimshon now is going with the people of Yehuda, and he's coming until Lechi, and Lechi again is the place where the Plishtim are camped. Right, the Mitzudas David says Huva. He was walking. They didn't tie his legs. Right, he was walking. He was walking. They just tied his hands. You know, maybe behind him. I don't know. Uplishtim he really crosso. So the Plishtim see Shimshon coming, bound up, coming towards them. So he riu. What does he riu mean? Mitzudas David. They sounded the trumpet. They sounded the trumpets. What's this? The trumpets of victory. Trumpets of simcha. Look at this, Baruch Hashem, we got him, guys, right? We got him, boys. He's coming. He's bound up, and now we're going to take him, and we're going to kill him. Now, what happens? It's obviously not exactly the way they planned. Vatitzlach alav ruach Hashem. The ruach Hashem passes over him. Vatitzlach, we find right in the last several prakim. Vatitzlach means it passes over him, and the ruach Hashem. Rashi says, what's the ruach Hashem? Ruach of gvura. And again, he has the supernatural strength that he has comes from the Ribono Shel Olam. Right? This is a way of getting back at the Plishtim. Vatiyena ha'avosim asher al zra'osav kapishtim asher baru va'esh. And he says these strong ropes that were holding his arms together became like scorched flax. Now, apparently, scorched flax is not all that strong, right? And he was able to kind of like, you know, it's like, you know, it's like tied together with a piece of spaghetti, and he was able to just. Yank his arms apart. Vayimasu esurav me'al yadav. And he just went like this, and the ropes kind of just melted off his hands. You know, they snapped. It was as if, the Mitzudas David says, it came off so easily, as if they just melted right off his hands. He snapped the ropes, okay? And now you can imagine what's going on here. The Plishtim, you know, see Shimshon, and again, they're scared of Shimshon. They're scared of him. That's clear in the parak that they're scared of him. But they're rejoicing when they see him coming towards them, shackled. And all of a sudden, he just breaks out of his shackles. You can imagine the pachad that the Plishtim are feeling right now, you know, as he's approaching them and just breaks loose out of these shackles, you know, these heavy ropes. Pasuk tesvav, vayimtza lechi chamor teria. He looks down, he finds this jawbone of a donkey that's teria. The Mepharshim say teria means it was moist. Like teria sometimes used. Rashi is very interesting. Rashi quotes medical books here. He says, I saw in the Sifrei Refuah that the pus that oozes out of a wound is called a teria. So you see that the teria means like moisture that comes out. So you have this moist bone. Why it has to be moist, I don't know. But apparently it was a moist bone. And he picks it up. He runs towards the Plishtim, and he uses this jawbone as a weapon, and he kills 1,000 men. He kills 1,000 of the Plishtim. Now again, keep in mind, the Plishtim are probably also gripped with fear. They're probably petrified because they're scared of Shimshon to begin with. You know, they were probably disarmed, you know, and you know, as soon as they saw him shackled, and now all of a sudden he breaks through out of the shackles, grabs this thing and runs towards them. They're probably petrified, and honestly, there's probably pandemonium in their camp as he's running towards them, and he's able to kill 1,000 people. Vayomer Shimshon, after he kills these 1,000 people, Shimshon says, "Balechi ha'chamor, chamor chamor asayim." So he says, with the jawbone of the donkey, I made piles, and Mepharshim say, I made piles of people, like piles of corpses. All these Plishtim that I killed. It's obviously a play on words. With the jawbone of the donkey, I killed a thousand people. The Malbim says also part of this is that he's comparing the Plishtim to the Am Hadom and the Chamor. They're the nation that's similar to a donkey, right? I mean, he's not machshiv their nation. You know, donkey is a very simple animal. It schleps. It's not a sophisticated animal. So he's also kind of giving a little bit of a dig at the Plishtim as he's killing them, that specifically the jawbone of a chamor, that they're, you know, they're basically no better than a chamor. And then that's how he kills them. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayiki chalonso ledaber, Vayashle chalachim yado. After he finishes his speech, you know, he gives his victory speech, his poem here, he throws the jawbone down, Vayikra lamakom ahu ramas lechi. And they call this place Ramas Lechi. Ramas, in Hebrew, Ramas means like the height or the peak of Lechi. But the Radak says Ramas also is Aramaic for that it was thrown. And Ramas Lechi, that the Lechi was thrown, and that's why he gave it that name. Pasuk Yerches. I'm sorry? So it seems like they kind of stayed in the background and let him go, right? No. He didn't kill the people of Yehuda. Yeah, Plishtim. Their whole job in this was only to bring Shimshon to the Plishtim. So they bound him up and they bring him towards the Plishtim, and you know, and then they probably stand back. They want to watch the fireworks from afar, and they let Shimshon go on his own. That's what the pasuk says, Huva Adlechi in Pasuk Yedal. It sounds like he's walking on his own. People of Yehuda are probably standing back to watch. Now they got a good show. Okay. Pasuk Yurches by Yitzma Me'od. Interesting, very interesting, twist in the storyline here. Vayitzma, he gets very thirsty. I guess it's hard work, you know, killing 1,000 plishtim with a jawbone of a donkey. So he worked up a sweat. So he gets very thirsty. Vayikru al Hashem, he calls out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vayomar, and he says to him, Atona sata v'yar avdecha es ha'teshua gedola hazos. You gave me this unbelievable salvation, this miraculous salvation that you enabled me to defeat all these plishtim. Ve'ata amus ba'atzama, and now I'm going to die of thirst. That sounds like he was really parched. He was really thirsty. Ve'nafalti bi'ad ha'arelim, and I'm going to die of thirst, and I'll be taken captive, and then they're going to get me. I mean, you brought me this far. You enabled me to defeat the Plishtim this time and time again, and now I'm going to get stuck. The Mitzvah Stavit said also, you know, if he wants a drink, he can just go to the local, you know, there's a city nearby. But he says, if I come into the city, they're going to kill me. And if I come into the city, they're going to take me captive. You know, it defeats the whole purpose. The Malbim says also that Hashem doesn't do a miracle for nothing. So Shimshon is saying that if they're gonna take me now, they're gonna take me captive. Then what was the point of the whole miracle? You just did a miracle that you enabled me to win this miraculous battle to kill 1,000 people in miraculous fashion. It's not for naught. It's for something, right? So he asks for the water. Pasuk Yudtes Vayivka Elokim es Hamachtesh Asher Balechi. So from this jawbone of the donkey, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates this miraculous spring that comes forth, spring of water. Vayetzu mimenu mayim, vayesht. So the water comes out of this jawbone, he drinks the water, vatoshav rucho, and he's satisfied, he's satiated, vayechi, and he's almost like revived. Vayechi, it's like he gets a second wind, he's revived. Al kein karash shema, ein hakore, asher balechi arayom azeh. And he adds a name to the place. Whereas the place was called Ramas Halechi, he adds a name that now it's also called Ein HaKore. What's Ein HaKore? So Ein HaKore means it's the spring, Ein like Ma'ayan. It's the spring of the one who called out. The spring of the one who called out to the Ribono Shel Olam. You know, and the Malbim says here, fascinating. He says that, you know, they used to give names to places, especially places where miracles happened. They would give a name that reminded people of the miracle. We learned about this also. The Ramban says a similar thing in Bracious. You know, certain places that were named after miracles, it was to remind the people that would come to that place later that the miracle happened. Why? So when a miracle happens to you, you have to make a bracha when you come back to that place. The Malbim says there are some shitos that say that even a miracle that happens to a yachid, anytime a Jew comes to that place, we have to make a bracha. Our minhag is not like that. We don't do that. We don't make a bracha every time we come to every place a miracle was done for a yachid. Right? But he says there are shitos like that. So that's why the names indicated the miracles, to remind people that miracles happened here and that they should make a bracha. They should give hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the miracles. And he says that's why he had to change the name. Right? He had to, I guess this just conked out. He had to add a name to the place. Why? Because one miracle happened that he was able to kill all the people with the jawbone. And now the second miracle happened that he had this water. And I thought to myself, why the miracle of the water? Maybe to show that this whole thing was really from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. right? It wasn't just a military victory. It's not just his military might and his physical strength that enables him to do it. But it's actually something, you know, he was thirsty also because Baruch Hu brought water out of a jawbone.
Like Hanukkah.
Like Hanukkah.
Let the menorahs last to show you that it
exactly,
was
exactly. It wasn't just a military victory. Right. Pasuk Kaf, with this we'll conclude. Vayishbot es Yisrael b'mei plishtim esrim shana, that he was the shofet of B'nai Yisrael in the times of the plishtim for 20 years. Now, all the Mefarshim point out here that it says b'mei plishtim. Why does it say b'mei plishtim? Because the plishtim were still ruling. Mm-hmm. Right, like we said, the plishtim were still in charge. The plishtim were still ruling because this was not a complete victory. Shimshon was not able to completely overthrow them. He was able to win here, win there. You know, defeat kill 1,000 people here, kill 1,000 people there, pockets. But it wasn't a complete victory where he was able to overthrow the plishtim, and the plishtim were still in charge despite his heroics.
God says he will begin.
Correct, vayachal. Exactly. Very good. Okay, we'll stop here for tonight. Thank you for coming.